Right, good day and welcome to yet another edition of the Citizen Talk. This is where we invite different people to come and help us unpack some of the most difficult issues. Now, without a doubt, the start of this year, in fact, 2023, the new year, has been, with a lot of drama, a lot of political developments. And also, we saw this week, when it comes to issues of governance, we saw the President Cyril Ramaphosa announcing his reshuffled cabinet. And we thought, let's invite our political editor here, the Citizen newspaper, Eric Naki, to come and help us, sort of analyze, some of the new names that have been brought in. And I suppose also one of the big standout points from this recent cabinet reshuffle was the announcement of a new minister for electricity. That's Kosiyenso Ramokopa, who obviously is former mayor of the city of Tshwane. And we'll be discussing this and many other developments in as far as politics is concerned in the country. And with that, let's welcome Eric Naki, who's our political editor at the Citizen newspaper. Eric, once again, welcome.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good morning and good morning to your listeners as well.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you here with us. As I was saying in my introduction, Eric, this year has been nothing short of drama in as far as politics is concerned in the country, but obviously we'll delve more into that as the show progresses. But the cabinet reshuffle, finally, it happened. The cabinet reshuffle that many people have been calling for, it has finally happened, despite, the delays that preceded that announcement by the president this week. First and foremost, your overall reaction to the reshuffled cabinet.
Thank you very much. At last, the cabinet reshuffle has happened. After all these months,
yeah.
I would say months, because since December, after the ANC National Conference, everybody was expecting a cabinet reshuffle. But finally, we have. I think my impression of this cabinet reshuffle is that it is a huge balancing act by the president. In that, I think that is one of the reasons for him to delay.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to balance a lot of things in order to come up with this team. Balancing in the sense of gender, balancing in the sense of youth, balancing in the sense of dynamics within the ANC.
ANC, yes.
Yeah, I think the dynamics within the ANC played a big role in the delay. In that the president needed to consult since December, January, February, and now it's March. I think in my understanding, in the way I view it, I think there was a bit of over-consultation around this. Consulting even at the last hour, the announcement was expected at 7 o'clock, then postponed to 8, again postponed to 8:30. Some people saying he was consulting. What is it to be consulted in those hours after all?
Because one would expect if the president or if you get an announcement to say the president will announce his new look cabinet on such and such a day, you'd expect him on that day
to
be ready.
Yes, exactly. That is typical of him. He tends to postpone and you'll wait in the evening. In fact, the entire country will be waiting in the evening on television. Some would be praying for load shedding not to happen. There were those that had no load shedding earlier, and when it was postponed, they experienced load shedding, so they missed out. So you would expect the president to be ready. When you say on such a day, I'm announcing, it means you have consulted everybody.
Yes.
You are ready. Your names are here. Everybody is ready to be sworn in the next day. You don't have to consult again. Otherwise, you don't have to announce that date.
Absolutely.
If there are still things to be, to be patched up, So that's typical of the president.
Yeah.
We were not surprised because that's how he works. He delays things. He delays especially appointments. Whether it's appointment of the SABC board, whether it's the suspension of the public protector, suspension of a judge, Judge Hopper from Cape Town, he will delay that.
Yeah.
until the last moment, mm-hmm. or until it is not, some people feel that it's too late to do that. Yeah, mm-hmm. that is exactly how I see this.
Yeah. Now, I want us to delve into, you know, some of the names that, you know, were much talked about prior to this announcement. Let's start at the top. Deputy President Paul Mashatile. I mean, I'm sure you've spoken to a number of political analysts as well, you know, to get their views as to whether or not he will appoint him. Will he be hesitant, or will he have to, you know, strategically think about this, you know, also taking into consideration all the dynamics, you know, playing out in the governing ANC. Your take on Paul Mashatile, do you think he was forced, perhaps?
Yeah, first of all, let's put the fact that Paul Mashatile came to be deputy president of the ANC, not under the Cyril Ramaphosa slate. He was nominated as deputy to Zweli Mkhize.
Mm.
That in itself is a dynamic in the ANC, in that he should be seen by some as not being a Ramaphosa person.
Mm.
But as things happened, Ramaphosa had no real choice but to appoint him. Analysts did say that he will hesitate. Indeed, he did hesitate. It's one of the things that
caused the delay,
influenced him to delay. You know, so he was trying to see what he can do about this man. You know, whether he should leave him out or appoint him as a minister, which he could have done if he liked. He could have not appointed him if he liked, but circumstances forced him. Because if you leave him out, then there will be tension in the ANC. In that. A tradition of the ANC is that the deputy president of the party becomes the deputy president of the country. You know, so it would have been difficult. It would have caused another issue with Mashatile, an issue where Mashatile would feel like, why is he leaving me out? I'm the one who qualifies for that position.
Sure.
Yeah, so whether he was thinking of appointing him as minister, some suggested he should test him to become the Minister of Electricity before. It didn't happen. He circumstances forced him to say, I appoint Mashatile as my deputy. Especially another thing that actually compelled him was the resignation of the Deputy President Didi Mabuza. Mabuza really put the president in a kind of a dilemma. In that he preempted what should happen. You know, the president, if he did not resign like that, because he announced at a funeral at his home, that he has resigned specifically to give way for Mashatile. You know, then it means he's telling you, Mr. President, here is somebody you must appoint.
Do you feel Didi Mabuza sort of felt betrayed in some way by, you know, Cyril, hence that, you know, that I don't know, abrupt announcement at the funeral?
I think he felt betrayed in that. He felt betrayed. He did that deliberately because he knew that he shouldn't do that. He should just resign and leave everything to the president.
Yes.
But deliberately he had to do that so that he doesn't give president any choice. You know, he felt betrayed in that the president, when he announced, when they nominated deputy president of the ANC, the president didn't support his deputy, Mabuza. He supported other candidates. Ronald Lamola. There Oscar Mabuyane. There were others. He supported those people. Why didn't he convince his party to say, no, Didi is the president.
Yes.
Is the deputy president. Therefore, guys, let's nominate him. But he just supported one of those people. I don't know whether it was Mabuyane or Lamola, but he didn't talk, so didn't say anything about Mabuza. You know, that in itself said something that he had, Mabuza was aggrieved. He felt betrayed by the president. Although Mabuza didn't get sufficient nominations, he was not nominated in the provinces. He got some nominations in Mpumalanga from his branch there and another branch in Mpumalanga. That's all. He didn't get much.
That's
so at the same time, Ramaphosa should have campaigned for him, you know, to make sure that he's there.
What do you think he decided against campaigning for Didi?
I think the most important thing is that Didi has fell out in Mpumalanga. He has no support anymore. he's not important to Ramaphosa anymore. Because if he were like unlike in Nasrec, the first Nasrec in 2017, Stidi came with a big constituency from Mpumalanga, and he was responsible for putting Ramaphosa into power, you know. But now, when he looks, Stidi is not in good terms with the PEC, the Provincial Executive Committee, and therefore he has no support at all. So Stidi is somebody who is not really standing in good standing, as far as support is concerned. So another thing that he had to support the likes of Oscar Mabuyane. Oscar Mabuyane came with a big constituency in the Eastern Cape. Oscar Mabuyane is a Ramaphosa man in and out. And he knew that if the Eastern Cape supported him, he will be the president again.
Yes.
So Mabuyane was very important to him. Even about people like Abu Ron Lamona were not as important as Mabuyane. Because Mabuyane come from the Eastern Cape. If I'm not mistaken, Eastern Cape is the second or third biggest
province
in the ANC. Therefore, that's a very important constituency. You can't, if Mabuyane is standing for deputy president, you can't say you support someone who doesn't.
Then you'll be in trouble.
I was even surprised that Mabuyane is not appointed in his cabinet.
Yeah.
You know, you would expect Mabuyane to be in the cabinet because to prepare him for future to be deputy president. But maybe something might happen in future. We don't know because the president is saying that he still is going to trim the cabinet.
Yeah.
It means that we might expect some other cabinet reshuffle of sorts in future.
And he sounds very positive or serious rather about it.
Yeah, he sounded serious, which to me meant that he might remove some of the ministers, you know. Yes.
Interesting times indeed. Folks, if you've just tuned in, we are in conversation with Eric Naki, who's the political editor for the Citizen newspaper. He's helping us to dissect and analyze, you know, the cabinet reshuffle, which was announced by President Cyril Ramaphosa early this week. Now, still on Paul Mashatile, you know, being appointed, sworn in as the deputy president of the country. And, you know, we've been talking about the situation that Ramaphosa was finding himself in. It's almost like he was pushed into a corner somewhere and he had to make that decision. Taking into consideration also, you know, the dynamics within the ANC, would you say it was yet another classic example of the ANC putting the ANC first ahead of the country?
It's exactly that. ANC always puts the ANC first ahead of the country. They don't look at whether someone can deliver or not. They look at whether where does someone stand politically within the party. Because Mashatile is somebody who he has a constituency. Gauteng, he's being supported by
KZN,
Natal as well. There are some in other provinces who believe that he is...
He's the man.
He's the man. And also, as someone, as I understand, is originally from Limpopo, automatically Limpopo will support him. You know, so those are some of the things that one needs to consider. It means the president has always been, since he came to power, been putting ANC first before the country, which he should consider whether that is a good thing. Because to me, it's not good. You need to put the country first. And then even in your appointment, don't consider much about what the party has to do, has to say.
Yeah.
You should consider what the country has to say.
Yeah.
But in politics, you survive because of those dynamics in your party. Whether you stay or you leave or you remain in the party, you depend on how much support you have within the party. That is the unfortunate part where somebody has to rely on the party and appoint certain people. But in the case of Mashatile, he didn't really have a choice. And another thing that one needs to consider is the fact that in the ANC, there is no raw material of leadership, of people who could be deputy president, who could be president in future. You know, when he looked at it, he couldn't find an alternative to Mashatile. And Mashatile was already qualifying to be the deputy president. Although many believe that Mashatile is not the right leader to be president, he's not a presidential material. That is what some say, that he is somebody, that's what some analysts are saying,
yeah,
somebody who has got his schemes, he has got his other things that he's, some even mention corruption.
Mm.
You know, those they make those allegations, though I believe nothing has been proven,
yes,
but they still make them,
mm,
you know, that he's not a suitable material to be the president of the country.
And does he even have the leadership qualities is one question that many people have been asking.
Yes.
Considering the fact that also this is a man who was once premier, yes, of Gauteng.
Yes.
Does he have the leadership qualities in your view?
I think assessing from the things that he has been doing, I do not think he is really a stable kind of a leader,
mm,
of in the caliber of Ramaphosa, the caliber of Thabo Mbeki.
Yeah,
I don't even want to mention Mandela. You know, you know, I don't think he's in that caliber.
Mm.
He's more of a youngish leader, more of somebody who is really into Gauteng dynamics.
Mm.
There are many things that he is involved in the politics of the ANC behind the scenes.
Mm.
There are many allegations made against him in the province of Northwest currently.
Mm. Mm.
You know, in the way he ran the processes towards national conference,
yeah,
the processes towards the provincial conference in Northwest.
Mm.
You know, there are cases that are in court against him. Those are some of the things that tell you that in reality, in terms of leadership, he is not really a fine-tuned kind of a leader of the ANC, because he is able to scheme even within the ANC work, because he was acting secretary general.
Mm.
You know, as acting secretary general, he had to deal with branches, deal with regions.
Yeah.
In the process, he did his own thing, allegedly, you know, because those are the allegations that some of the branches are making.
Mm.
That's why they went to court to challenge Mashatile,
yeah,
for allegedly misleading the court in Mahikeng,
mm,
to say that interim provincial committee that was there was actually reappointed,
mm,
when it was not reappointed by the NEC. There was never an NEC meeting that set to do that.
Sure.
This is a very controversial issue which could see Mashatile being charged for perjury, which could see even the Provincial Executive Committee in the Northwest being disbanded. But it depends on how the court deals with that matter.
Yeah, yes, it's going to be interesting to see. And still on the issue of, you know, Mashatile's leadership qualities, Eric. Again, he was a premier in Gauteng, and also during his tenure as premier, there were always, you know, allegations of corruption, you know, his name being mentioned here and there. What do you think of him going forward? You know, what role is he going to play now as deputy president? We know in the past deputy presidents were given responsibilities, certain responsibilities. For instance, one can think of Eskom, where Cyril Ramaphosa then was deputy. His responsibility was, you know, to oversee or preside over the so-called war room. What do you think, what responsibilities would be given to Mashatile this time around?
Usually the responsibilities of the deputy president of the country are more a bit ceremonial.
Mm.
You know, he is more of, he becomes an acting president in the absence of the president. It's only then that he starts to do some jobs.
Mm.
Otherwise, in reality, the deputy president doesn't do much. He's the head of the National AIDS Council.
Sure.
He chairs that. And he does other things, take responsibility over a national, there's another body that he's in charge of.
Mm.
Sometimes he's also gets to chair some of the activities in Eskom.
Mm.
You know, but now with a new minister, I don't think the deputy president will play that role anymore, because in the past there was something called war room at Eskom, which was more run by the deputy president.
Yeah.
But I think now that there's Kosienzo Ramhopa there, I think everybody's going to move back and watch him. I think the deputy president is supposed to take a back seat in doesn't have a real important role to play.
Mm-hmm.
He's like there for the sake of being there.
Mm. And that's despite the array of challenges that the country faces, right?
No, all presidents always are very careful to give the deputy president so much jobs that will make him more prominent.
Mm.
You know, that is all presidents always do that,
mm.
except, of course, Mandela.
Mm.
Mandela, in fact, it was everybody thought Mbeki could have been the president because Mandela took a back seat and he let Mbeki in front.
Mm.
Under Zuma, now and that, it was always Jacob Zuma in front. You know, same as for Cyril Ramaphosa.
Yeah.
Another thing that you need to understand here is you need to watch what roles will Mashatile give himself. You know, there will be roles he'll be given by Cyril, but what roles will he give himself? Will he be outspoken about certain things that should happen? Will he be doing certain tasks that he believes that will make him appear like he is
in charge
now? Mm. Those are the things that we need to look as we move forward.
Mm.
You know, those things will tell you that he is ambitious. He is looking at in future. By the time 2024 comes,
I should be
seen by people as being the presidential material, the future president. I can take over from Cyril. But usually in South Africa, the deputy president takes a back seat.
Mm.
That is why David Mabuza would go to Russia, stay there for long, although he was sick.
Mm.
You know, he will once in a while go to parliament to answer some
questions
head of the government business in parliament.
Mm,
you know, this is one of the things that he has to do.
To do.
But those are not, that don't make him the real president or president in waiting.
Mm.
Yeah, thank you.
Interesting times indeed. Folks, we are in conversation with Eric Naki. He's the political editor of the Citizen newspaper, and he's here to help us unpack, you know, the cabinet reshuffle. You saw the announcement of Paul Mashatile as the deputy president of the country following the resignation of D.D. Mabuza. And also what stood out, Eric, was the announcement of the much talked about Minister of Electricity, a new ministry. As I watched him the other day on TV following that swearing-in ceremony, that's Kgosietso Ramakgopa. He sounded very much energetic. Would you say he's the right man for the job? Is he capable of getting us out of this electricity mess that we find ourselves in?
I think he is really, I'm very optimistic.
Mm.
That he is the right man for the job. His enthusiasm really, and his energy tells me that he knows exactly what he wants to do.
To do.
And he has got the right qualifications.
Mm.
I look at his CV. I found him to be a man, one of the few politicians who are properly qualified.
Yeah.
He's got two masters. He has got a PhD.
Wow.
You know, that man is really better one of those qualifications is engineering,
Which is so needed in this electricity.
Although it's civil engineering, but it's important to be an engineer because you know exactly what you need in terms of ESCOM.
Mm.
You know, an engineer is like any other engineer.
Sure.
You know, that is what during the debates around the load shedding, some analysts were saying that that position of a minister needs someone who's qualified, it was a technician.
Mm.
You know, now here we are, now we have a technician, you know. Ramakgopa is well known when it comes to policy issues. I think there was a lot of reliance on the part of Cyril Ramaphosa on him on policy matters.
Mm.
You know, that's why he brought him there.
In the presidency
when he moved from Gauteng to, you know, I think he played a role. That is why the president identified him as the person who can do this job.
Mm.
Whether he will be able to actually end load shedding, that's another question. You know, load shedding is very difficult. You know, some people sometimes come enthusiastic.
Mm.
After some time, they get tired.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm very optimistic about him.
Mm.
To me, he looks like somebody who has got a plan.
Wow.
He has got, besides the plans that are there to defeat load shedding. He seems to have something in him that he believes. Even the way he was asked by media, he said, no, he wants to get to work with the board to see what the board has to say. He is going to consult, but it looks like he's going to be somebody who is hands-on. You know, he's not going to be somebody who is a minister somewhere, you know, but doesn't come. It looks like he's going to be the one who is frequenting Eskom, who's going to visit the power stations in Mpumalanga and elsewhere. You know, it doesn't look like somebody who will sit in office and just talk.
And from time to time call press briefings.
You know, that is what I see about him. I see many people are criticizing him. I spoke yesterday to the president or the leader of the Freedom Front Plus. He was very, very pessimistic. He said that this man failed as mayor of Tshwane. How could he succeed to deal with Eskom, the energy crisis, you know. But if you talk to some people in Tshwane, especially who were close to him, they say he had many successes in Tshwane as mayor, you know. Therefore, he was not so much cut for that mayorship position, but he looks like a man cut for this job, my understanding.
Interesting times indeed, I must say. And, When Cyril was announcing, or before he announced that cabinet reshuffle, also a lot of people were pinning their focus on, you know, the portfolios of public enterprise, which is headed by Praveen Gordhan, as well as minerals, energy and resources, headed by Gwere Mantashe. Now, how do you foresee Ramaphosa's working relationship with Mantashe and Gordhan? How is that going to be? How do you think he's going to approach? Because also, if one listens to the president's speech when he was announcing the reshuffle, he spoke a lot about also the powers that Ramaphosa will have, you know, as the man in charge of that electricity ministry.
Yes. You know, one thing that you need to understand about Cyril Ramaphosa, if you are failing or he's supposed to remove you from the position, he won't remove you. He will appoint a parallel structure. You know, to me, that the appointment of the Minister of Electricity is a kind of vote of no confidence in the existing ministers. Minister Praveen Gordhan.
It's almost like a soccer team, right? Once they start seeing that the coach is failing, instead of immediately removing him, they will appoint what is called the technical director.
We find the technical director has more say than the coach. That is exactly what is happening. Maybe he realized that Praveen Gordhan is tired and he's getting old, but instead of removing him, he must keep him there, but he must take most of the functions on Eskom to somebody else. Because he can remove Praveen. Praveen is very important to him politically. Praveen did a great job in fighting state capture. He's still a buffer. You know, he's still standing there as somebody who is willing to deal with state capture. And that thing is very important to Cyril. And also, I don't understand why, because the ANC National Conference resolved that Eskom should fall under the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy, Gwede Mantashe. But instead of doing that, he appointed the Minister of Electricity. That also could mean that he doesn't really have confidence in Mantashe to do that job. Or maybe because Mantashe is somebody who has got certain way of dealing with things.
Sure.
For instance, Mantashe has become known as a man who promotes coal over renewable energy. That is why some NGOs, some civil society, and some countries are opposed to him, and business and opposition. They think Mantashe is not good minister for energy. But under the circumstances, coal is needed.
It's needed.
Because we don't have
an immediate alternative.
Yes, we still need an alternative. But coal will play a big role for the foreseeable future.
Yes.
If you notice in other countries like Germany, they are going back to coal in a big way. Germany is a country that is known and is leading in renewable energy. Even the former chancellor there was here promoting renewable energy.
Yeah.
But after she left, they went back to to coal. And there are big protests in Germany. People, NGOs are protesting against the mining of coal there.
Sure.
You know, here in South Africa is still going to play a role. But I think that the president would like someone whom he will have maybe control over. Maybe those other people are too strong, are too powerful for him, like Mantashe and Minister Pravin Gordhan, that he needed somebody else who is going to do this job. At the same time, that both Gordhan and Mantashe did say that this minister is going to be more like a minister project manager, you know, someone who's going to do this job. And even the Secretary General of the ANC, Fikile Mbalula, did say that this minister is going to be there for a short while. When the load shedding is over, he's going to go.
Exactly what I heard him saying as well, saying this is just a temporary thing. But when one listens to what Cyril was saying as president, it's like he wants him there for a much longer period. And obviously load shedding is not something that's going to be sorted out overnight.
And that minister is going to stay for as long as Cyril is in power. I'm telling you now.
Interesting.
There's no such thing as he will go after load shedding. Load shedding is not going to end now. They even predicted 2 years, 2 years from now, which means then it may not even end there. You know, the energy problem is still there.
Yeah.
You know, we still have got problems with all these generators, know, in South Africa. So the minister will be there for a long time, you know, especially if he shows that he can deal
deliver.
With it. You know, there, many people say, no, he must stay. This position must be permanent.
Yeah, he knows.
You know, they would rather trim, make the minister of energy. Maybe do more mineral work, mineral resources. And then maybe even the Minister of Public Enterprises even take away the Eskom from him.
From him, yeah.
That may be the possibility. Minister of Enterprises, anyway, has got many state-owned enterprises under him. Therefore, if Eskom is taken away from him, it won't make any difference.
Yes. Absolutely. Now, before we, in fact, let's get straight into the other ministers. I mean, for instance, Lindiwe Sisulu, former tourism, we know how outspoken she has been. Well, she was not retained by Cyril. And she's been very vocal when it comes to Cyril's leadership, even, you know, building up to last year's 55th National Elective Conference of the ANC. Not only Lindiwe Sisulu has been vocal, NDZ, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, you know, who went even as far as voting, you know, against the adoption of the Palapala report. But she gets retained, but moved to another portfolio.
Yes.
What's your sense around that? Is it because she still, you know, enjoys a lot of support, you know, within ANC branches, particularly in KZN? Perhaps that's one of the reasons Cyril said, "Nah, let me rather keep her," even though, you know, she went against ANC, you know, decisions around Palapala. But what do you make of her? And obviously, Lindiwe Sisulu is out; she's gone.
I think that my assessment from the time I heard that, I said, you know, NDZ, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, committed the most serious offense in the ANC to vote against your president, to say your president must be impeached. In other words, when you say he must be impeached, it means a process, because that parliamentary process was the beginning of the process of impeaching the president. If you vote and say, yes, this thing, vote, it means then you say the president, the process must start, the president must be impeached. The ANC closed ranks and they decided to support the president. There were other members who supported NDZ, and they decided to support that motion. But Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma committed the most serious offense for any party. We don't even know whether the ANC, which means because Mbalula was threatening during the ANC National Conference that those who voted against action will be taken against them. If she's appointed as minister, we still ask, is action going to be taken against Nkosi Dlamini Zuma for voting against the president? You know, coming now to Lindiwe Sisulu. Lindiwe Sisulu was vocal against the president on many things. At the beginning of the year, last year, she actually criticized the judiciary in a very bad way. You know, be that as it may, but Lindiwe Sisulu, although she was publicly critical of the president, her stance is not as serious as that of her situation is not as serious as that of NDZ. Because she was just criticizing the president, but she never actually participated in the vote to have the president impeached. I think she stayed away.
She was nowhere to be seen.
She was nowhere to be seen. Yeah. She was smart enough to do that. You know, it means then, Lindiwe, the reason that Lindiwe Sisulu is removed is partly that, but it's not really that. I think Lindiwe Sisulu doesn't really have a constituency.
Sure.
If you look at it, what is her constituency? She's just, although I always am reluctant to mention that, she's just the daughter of the struggle heroes, the stalwarts. You know, she doesn't really, on her own, really she's a stalwart of some sort, but no, she doesn't have supporters, not even in the Women's League. You know, she is an easy target, I can say. She's an easy target of a cabinet reshuffle. You know, I don't think, I think the president should have retained Lindiwe Sisulu rather than NDZ. Because Lindiwe didn't commit a very serious offense.
As compared to
this one who said the president must be impeached. You know, one of the reasons that Nkosazana was retained was because she comes from KwaZulu-Natal. In KwaZulu-Natal, she has got a constituency there, especially in the areas of Nkandla and where she comes from. Although when she was nominated by the Nkandla branch, she didn't get much support from the province, from the provincial executive. They rejected her, you know. It means then Cyril Ramaphosa wanted to balance, to have people from KZN.
Because even the top seven doesn't have someone from KZN, right?
Yes. So that's what he wanted to achieve, to have a KZN person in the government, and then also to have Sihle Zikalala as well there.
Yeah.
You see, he wanted to make KZN happy, but Lindiwe Sisulu was just an easy target. She has no constituency, but ideally, the president should have removed them both.
Sisulu and this.
Yeah, you should have removed them. Because really you cannot have people within your cabinet that are against you. You know, it doesn't work that way anywhere in the world, even in democracies. They do criticize in America, in the House of Representatives, in the Senate. You know, they do criticize the same president of their party. But those kind of democracies are different. In Africa, if you criticize, you get removed.
Removed, yeah. Yes. Interesting times indeed. And another position that really caught my attention was the deputy or second deputy SG of the ANC, Ramakgopa, also getting appointed in cabinet, as announced by the president. And when one listens to what Fikile Mbalula was saying when he was talking to the media shortly after that reshuffle announcement, he saw that as that appointment in particular as a link, right, between Luthuli House and government.
Yes.
Now, I'd be very welcoming of such a link or appointment only if it is to make sure that service delivery does happen to the people. Your take on that, on that appointment?
My take on that is that Marupini Ramakgopa became second deputy secretary general of the ANC, which is a new position.
Yes.
You know, that was created at the conference in December. They wanted somebody who is going to be more, they are trying to empower the office of the secretary general, you know, but in reality, ANC wouldn't have been able or been having money to pay her. if she was to work full time
at Luthuli, yeah.
At Luthuli House. I like Nomvula Mokonyana yes, Nomvula is there as the Deputy Secretary General. But in order to compensate for that, they have to take her to government, but still remaining to do the job of the Deputy Secretary General.
Yeah.
But more on the monitoring, more on evaluating things,
sure.
More on standing there as an ANC official in charge of making sure that the state is delivering.
Mm.
That is why they took her to the government to be where it is. She will be doing this job, from my understanding, of making sure all ministers are doing their job, they are delivering. At the same time, when it comes to ANC accountability, she will still be the one who will be there, who will be liaising with Fikile Mbalula about what the ministers are doing.
How far
is this minister? How far is that minister?
Mm.
Because Mbalula, one of the jobs of Mbalula is to make sure the state delivers.
Mm.
And Ramakgopa is there to do that job on behalf of Mbalula.
It's almost like a spy, right?
Yes.
To exactly. Say if a certain minister is not doing their job.
Yes.
Gone are those days where we just keep quiet and let everything, you know, get swept under the carpet. Action needs to be taken, and the country is facing a serious service delivery, you know, challenge.
Yes.
And something needs to be done. So basically what I'm saying is, it sounds as if her job would be to spy, but spy in a good way, right?
Yes.
In a good way to make sure that services are getting delivered to the people of the country.
She's also going to, from what I heard, her interviews last night, she's also going to monitor the mayors.
Yeah.
To make sure the mayors are doing the job.
Struggling municipalities.
Yes, she's going to be one ANC official who's also a minister. Who's going to be moving around the country, who's going to be making a lot of phone calls directly to ministers, directly to mayors, to say how far are you with this project. There are many projects that come at a standstill in the provinces. In the municipalities, there are many potholes. There are many people that are complaining.
Mm.
So she's going to have that kind of job to make sure if a project was scheduled to be carried out, to ask the mayor how far is that project. Monitoring and evaluate how far it has been done.
It sort of sounds also, Eric, like another way also to avoid a situation where a certain municipality or where Section 139 is invoked, right, on a certain municipality, you know, but therefore being placed under administration. So they rather nip it in the bud, right, before it gets to that point. And I suppose that's where, again, promises come in. And I suppose, you know, premiers will also be closely monitored, you know, to say, we don't want the situation where you get to that last resort, because that's a last resort. To place a municipality under administration, it means that there's nothing else. You've tried everything. There's nothing else that can be done to turn things around in that municipality. So I suppose premiers as well will be closely monitored in this instance.
Yes, that's going to be her job, to monitor all executives everywhere, whether it's at a provincial, local, national level. She's, in a way, she's going to be one of the most powerful ministers.
Yeah.
She's in charge of the ministers. Are you doing your job?
Yeah.
Mayor, are you doing your job?
Yeah.
Premier, are you doing your job? How far are you with the project? Some of the ministers, some of the mayors, some of the premiers may not even like her for doing that. But in reality, as you say, there are situations where municipalities have to be placed under administration, under that section of the constitution. And I think this is going to help to prevent that. If ANC is smart enough, they should make sure that she does her job in such a way that there is no need to declare municipality under administration. That is a very crucial position.
Absolutely. Because again, Eric, if you look at the different spheres of government, you know, from national, province, getting to local. Now, the role, as the way I understand it, the role of province is to conduct oversight, right, at your local municipalities, make sure that things go accordingly. And the moment you sense or see a red flag, you should be able as province to intervene immediately and say, guys, I think you headed in the wrong direction. Rather come back, move into this direction. And in that sense, you also, again, avert or avoid a situation where a municipality is placed under administration?
Yes, there are. We have seen situations where municipalities in South Africa were not only placed under section, was it
139? Yeah.
139. They were placed under section 100, where the national government intervenes to say this province is failing.
Mm.
Northwest. Ugh. You know, they declared that. Section 100.
Mm.
It means the national government is running that province.
That province, yeah.
You know, I think it happened elsewhere as well. I think in Limpopo some time back, during the time of Castle Matale, there was a Section 100 interventions by some department, on some departments like Treasury and others. They were run by the national government.
Mm.
So it means then the administration at provincial and even at local government will be under scrutiny, know, from now on. But my question now is this going to work at all? Because ANC likes to put these structures in place.
But when it comes to implementation,
the problem in South Africa is implementation. Mm. They've got big plans. Mm. They've got
good policies.
Good policies. Mm. ANC has the best policies in the country. Make no mistake.
Mm.
But when it comes to implementation, they don't.
Sure.
You know, you read any of his policy fund. This makes sense. Mm. This makes sense. This makes sense.
Mm.
Implementation, zero. Sure. You know, that is the situation that South Africa finds itself in.
Mm. Yes. Mm. Now, lastly, I see we're running out of time, Eric. Again, we spoke about Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. We spoke about Lindiwe Sisulu. When one looks, we spoke about Gweri Mantashe. We spoke about Pravin Gordhan. When one looks at Becky Cele,
yes.
Minister of Police, he is one lucky guy, right?
Yes.
To have been retained and still has his job. What do you make of him, considering also, you know, the high levels of crime that's been happening in the country? Is he lucky to really have his job? And what do you think would have sort of influenced Cyril to say, nah, I'm retaining him?
You know, Becky Cele comes from KZN.
Uh-huh.
He's a KZN cadre,
yeah,
coming from there.
Mm.
Ramaphosa doesn't interfere, doesn't want to play with that situation, doesn't want to offend KwaZulu-Natal.
Because he still has to go and campaign.
Yeah, because Becky Cele is very crucial when it comes to giving power to Cyril Ramaphosa.
Yeah.
He's one of the people that he relies on in KZN to campaign for him there.
Yeah.
So Becky Cele is seen as a minister who is failing to fight crime. All he does is stands on public platforms, make statements, promising the communities. He was this week in Westbury
yeah.
that we'll do this, we'll fight crime here, we are going to go house to house.
Mm.
You know, it's not the first time that there is this problem of gangsterism.
Mm.
There was a kind of a sort of state of emergency of sort in Westbury specifically.
Mm.
When there was a fight among the gangsters, all the police went there. There was even a meeting at the local sports field with the community, with the police to say that we are going to fight crime.
Mm.
We are going to go door to door. We are going to search houses. He's saying the same thing today. Gangsterism is there, you know, in Westbury. So Becky Cele to Ramaphosa, he retains him because politically he's good for him.
Mm.
You know, otherwise, he's not good for the country. I think it's one of the ministers that he should have reshuffled.
Mm.
Maybe even move to transport and then put somebody else or to police.
Yeah.
If he doesn't want to throw him away, he must move him to another department where he won't be dealing with crime.
Mm.
Crime is very serious in South Africa.
Yes,
it's becoming a very, very...
It's a pandemic.
It's worsening.
Yeah.
It's worsening. It's a big pandemic that has... really no vaccine, you know. That is a big problem.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Somebody said to me, crime in South Africa. In fact, I read it somewhere.
Mm.
Crime in South Africa is so high, the crime rate, that your trip to the shop, to Spa or any other shop, will be your last trip.
Mm.
Hey, I was scared.
What you're thinking,
I was scared to hear that your trip to the shop could be your last trip.
Your last trip.
You could be shot, you know.
Caught in a crossfire.
You could caught in a crossfire, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm.
Hey, I was scared to hear that. To me, that is the best way of describing
the situation
of crime in South Africa.
Absolutely. Sure. Eric, we unfortunately don't have the whole day, but thank you so much for coming through and for always availing yourself whenever we need your expert analysis to, you know, assist us in unpacking some of the most difficult political situations. Yes. Very soon we'll talk about the DA's coming elective conference. They are also important to have a discussion around.
Yes.
We'll soon talk about that. But thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Folks, that's been another edition of the Citizen Talk. We are back again next week with yet another edition. Between now and then, you take good care of yourselves. Cheers.